Okay, we'll take your phone calls this hour with Stephen Weiss. Next hour, paranormalist John Zaffa joins us. So we'll do all this next on Coast to Coast AM. Before we go to call, Stephen, let's wrap up on those generational trends that are out there.
I was just talking about that group from 1984 to 1995, which in our work we call the Transformers. They are, since in keeping with the subject matter for this evening, they're very Scorpio in nature. They're very, very oriented towards doing whatever it is that's going to acquire them power, a cultural power. It's funny, as I say, they're the college students right now, and they have very open minds when it comes to anything that will teach them how to be more effective and more powerful. They understand the world that they're facing is one of competition for resources, and they don't want to be the losers. They want to be the winners in that struggle. So they're very open-minded in a way, in the sense that they don't dismiss things out of hand. They're realists, but they are. For a while, we were calling them the Marines, my co-authors and I. There's this sense that they bond together in gangs that are going to make a very big difference in this world for better or for good. It's up to them. You know, we don't know how that's going to manifest, but they are a lot of the business people I work with complain to me about the Pluto and Libra generation, or the group that we call the believers, the people who were born from 1970. Or 73 to 1983, that this was a group that bonding with their fellow believers is more important than achieving things. This is not true of the group that's in college right now. They are going to investigate everything. They're going to be a powerful generation that's going to make a big impact on the world. I hope for good, and that will be the theme of all of their. They're the group that, you know, that grew up with all of these shooter games and on computer and, sure, and who are very, very, very competitive and ambitious and aggressive. They'll change the world. They truly will.
You know, the Obama administration came in like a rocket ship almost a year ago, and it's fizzling right now in terms of popularity. Three more years to go. What are the astrological trends here?
I tell you, the moments that the polls closed in the West on election night, all of the major networks announced simultaneously that Obama had won the election, and I thought that was a great moment to cast the chart for that moment. And it turned out to be I think revealing. I think what we're dealing with President Obama, it's a perfect mixture of the great Robert Redford movie, The Candidate, are you familiar with that movie?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And so at the very end, you know, the movie's about him winning this election, being the young guy, you know, beating the established guys, and then you know, at the very end of the movie, he says, "So what do we do now?" You know, that so much of it about it was winning the election. Now with Obama, it's that, so what do we do now? Coupled with a sense that, you know, astrologically speaking, in terms of the symbolism of astrology, he is born to be the king. So you've got this guy who's been coronated with a sense of, well, what do I do to affect my mission? And that's all over the chart for the moment when we all knew he was going to be the president. I'm not tremendously politically oriented. I admire this man so much. He clearly was. That speech he gave in Chicago after he got elected was maybe the best speech of his administration. He seemed born to the role of president, but I think that it's stacked against him about what he's supposed to do to benefit humanity. I believe that he wants to benefit humanity, you know, at the very core of his being.
He just doesn't know how.
He doesn't know how. It's too awesome a task. It's too awesome a task. The world is looking to leadership right now. This is another effect of this Capricorn moment we're in. Right now, everybody wants leaders who can tell us exactly what we're supposed to be doing to affect change for the better in our life. And yet we don't have that. We don't seem to have that gene pool operating right now. We haven't found these people who clearly, concisely, and with a consensus can tell us what it is we're supposed to be doing. And I think that's the wrestling match. he feels like the right guy. He's the king. And yet he just doesn't know what to do. And there's no consensus to back him because, as you have pointed out so eloquently, you know, nobody's willing to compromise or take the middle ground or do the compromising right now.
Okay, let's go to the calls now. We'll go to Panama City, Florida. Alex, you're up east of the Rockies. Alex, go ahead. Good morning.
Hey, I just wanted to ask Stephen if you knew, if you'd done any work like with the Chinese zodiac.
The answer, the simple answer is no. Although I'm fascinated and aware of it, and happy to be celebrating the ox year this year. I'm an ox myself, and so is Obama for that matter. It's supposed to be his year. So hopefully that'll manifest. But no, I'm not an expert on the Chinese zodiac.
Yeah, I just thought it was kind of fascinating, too. I mean, just on that, you know, because you're talking about the generational thing that, I mean, my daughter was born when I was 24, so that's, you know, again, she's a year of the rat, and then my son was born when I was 36, which, again, makes him a rat, and I teased my wife, who's a dragon. I said, you live in a family of rats now.
You know, but exactly, multiples of 12. That's another reason that I like using Jupiter so much, because it has a direct correspondence to the years of the Chinese zodiac. And those 12 multiples are interesting, that your children are spaced that way, all those rats.
You know, many experts that come on the program, Stephen, economic experts here, talk about that we're not out of the woods by a long shot, and that we could, get some more hits. Your take?
Yeah, as we're in this Capricorn period, it's all about the management of resources. Capricorns are all about knowing the way to use limited assets for maximum effect. That's what we're looking for right now. I mean, the part that I understand just from astrological symbolism is that we're not getting good information right now. I give lectures to the extent that I'm involved with economics. The lectures I've been giving lately are, we're getting bad information right now. What's going to burst the bubble is the conclusive evidence that the numbers aren't the right numbers anymore. They're not accurate. And in living through a Capricorn period where the issue is managing resources, we're still not out of the oil woods, for example. There's every indication that oil's going to be a problem again. It hasn't gone away forever, and so much of the world's economy is pinned to that. Yeah, as I told you, George, I really I hate the aspect of astrology that's always telling you what the bad thing that's going to happen. But yes, that's the symbolism, is that we're going through a lean time right now. We've had our fat years, and now we're going through our lean years. Doesn't mean the end of the world. It doesn't mean civilization dies. But yes, it's going to be uncomfortable according to the astrological symbolism.
Okay, we go to Denver now. It's Paul's turn. Paul, you're on with Stephen Weiss.
Hi, Stephen.
Hey, Paul.
Do you use void, of course, moon in terms of predicting or not predicting or not to take action and things?
Yeah, just for the audience's sake, the moon moves very quickly. It's the fastest moving object through the zodiac. It spends about 2.5 days in a sign, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. And the moon is said to be void, of course, when it doesn't make any Ptolemaic aspects, strong aspects to any other planets before it leaves the sign. So there's a period. Sometimes it's very short, like 30 minutes. Sometimes it can be an entire day where the moon isn't making aspects. And according to traditional astrology, you're not supposed to do things. You're not supposed to initiate things during void, of course, moons, because they won't take, okay? There'll be no traction there. So in answer to your question, though, having tried to define it, I always notice them. I always notice them, and I guess I can only say it's a kind of a superstition where I try to avoid doing things on void, of course, moons. I don't know whether that's scientifically accurate or not, but I always notice if the moon is not going to make any more aspects before it leaves the sign, and I guess I try to pull back a little bit. When I do occasionally do predictive work for clients and they want to know when to start something, I always say, well, maybe you could wait a little bit until the moon moves into the next sign just to be safe. So I guess the answer is yes, sort of.
Okay. All right.
There you go. Thanks, Paul. Next up, Cleveland we go. First-time caller, we've got John. Hey, John, take it away.
Hi. My question, too, is regarding the Void of Course Moon. Last year during the presidential election, I read an article on one of the astrology websites, and they said that many of the presidents who were either inaugurated by their nominated by their parties at conventions during a void or inaugurated during a void had unfavorable outcomes in their presidency, including FDR, Lincoln, Kennedy, and Clinton. And Obama was inaugurated during a void. It was void from about noon until about 25 or 26 minutes after the hour. So I'm thinking that they deliberately screwed up the inauguration, and then he retook the oath of office when the moon was not void. Yes. I thought of that immediately when they screwed it up. And that's the first thing that I thought of when they screwed up the oath, and then he retook it.
Yeah, you're talking my kind of conspiracy, John. I think it just surfaced. It happened to surface during the Reagan administration that they kept an astrologer around to schedule appointments and so forth. But absolutely, in the sense that this is certainly not something that the nation is ready for, not our nation, to find out that astrologers are counseling chiefs of state. But yeah, I'm with you. I'll go along with you on that. Why not? That's as good an explanation as any.
Well, I've heard that before. I also heard when Reagan was sworn in as governor of California that they did it in the wee hours just because of that.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. Astrologers debate over, there are two charts that are circulating that are said to be charts of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and most astrologers use that event as the chart of the United States of America.
As the birth date,
chart that we should use in doing the astrological work on the United States of America. And one of these charts, which is known as the Sibley chart, is a common sense chart. It indicates that the declaration was signed at around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon of July 4th. It makes a lot of sense, in reconstructing the history. But as many of your guests in the past have pointed out, this was a pretty Masonic, semi-mystical group of people, the people who founded our nation. And so there's another chart that's just as widely adhered to that said that the Declaration of Independence was actually signed on purpose at 2:15 in the morning because the founding fathers were aware enough astrologically to force certain conditions in the chart that they wanted to see manifest. And so we'll probably debate this forever, but there's reason to believe that since the founding of our country, political leaders have availed themselves of astrological help.
Well, we know they were huge into symbolism,
yes.
Stephen. And let's go to Mike now in Burlington, Massachusetts. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Michael, go ahead.
How you doing, George? Hi.
Good, Mike.
Yeah, on the Mayan calendar when it runs out in 2012, whatever, how does it restart itself over? Does he understand how it does it?
If you just think of the calendar as just like we have 12 months in the year, and when we at the end of December, the calendar doesn't run out. We just start again in January. It's that kind of phenomenon that I think is going on here. That's not to say, in fact, you know, frankly, early in this century, we may run into a troubled period based on the section of the calendar that we're going to re-hit again. But it's not a sense that time stops because you reach the end of the calendar. You start a new year, or as I said earlier, the odometer gets knocked to all those nines, and then it goes to zero, but the car's still running. So it's basically a numerological system that's likely to repeat rather than end. That's my two cents on the matter.
All right, very good. Mike, thank you. Let's go to Barbara now in Carmel, Indiana. Hey, Barbara, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What is the concern about Scorpio, since Scorpio is before Aquarius, and I know Aquarius is a dragon, and the ox is a Scorpio. How does that intertwine?
Regrettably, I have no idea what that analysis means. It doesn't relate to anything in my awareness of astrology, and that's probably my fault rather than yours, and I don't know how to answer your question.
Okay, well, but it's going to be a good year? Is it going to be?
I was just saying perhaps earlier I made an allusion to the fact that I'm an ox in the Chinese calendar.
So am I.
And this is the year of the ox. Every 12 years we get a year.
Uh-huh.
And so it's supposed to be multiples of 12 in your life. When you're 12 and 24 and 36, 48 and 60 and 72 are supposed to be your year, and they're supposed to be favorable. Now this President Obama also happens to be an ox, so it's supposed to be a good year for him. You know, so there you go. I mean, anyone wants to, you know, be an astrological detractor can say, oh really? If this is Obama's good year, I'd hate to see his bad year. But basically, it's supposed to be a good year for us oxes. So happy ox year.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Good news for me and you.
Yes, indeed. Thanks, Barbara.
Okay, thanks, Barbara, indeed. Stephen, is there any new trends in astrology? I know we've got a numbers lady, Glynis McCants, comes on quite a bit. She talks about numerology. She talks about things to do. Put an 8 in your wallet. You'll get new fortunes and riches. Does astrology change, or is it so ancient it stays the same?
You know, the answer to that is both, and so we know that it's ancient, and some things never change. But I'll tell you what's going on that's very hopeful to the astrological community. The big burst of astrological interest in the United States took place around the end of the 1960s and the beginning of the 1970s. There was a very rich strain of astrological energy, and it produced many of the best astrologers who are working in astrology today. It was a time where it became dominant. Well, that generation is aging, and for years, for decades, they wondered, would there be another burst of astrological energy, a new generation coming along that cared about this enough to pursue it on an aggressive, interested level? And there is right now. I mean, that's one of the beautiful things is that there is a new generation coming along, and here's how they differ from that group that was in the 70s. That group in the 70s, earlier we talked about psychological astrology, about how the Jungians, you know, launched a psychological orientation towards astrology. Well, this new generation of astrologers are very interested in synthesis. So you find many of them not only practicing Western astrology, the kind of astrology we've been discussing tonight, but also Eastern, Hindu, Vedic, Jyotish astrology, which is far more predictive in nature. You know, we didn't talk about that much this evening, but in India, why would anyone go to an astrologer if they weren't going to tell you, you know, the future? In other words, it's a far more predictive kind of astrology. And what these new younger astrologers are doing is they want to synthesize the psychological and the predictive. And it's very exciting if this is a field of interest. And I think we're going to see a lot of new things in astrology where West and East are going to get together and exchange a lot of information.
Well, it's remarkable how it works, Stephen. That's what fascinates me, because I'm convinced it does.
Amen.
You know what?
Amen. It's really hard to believe. To this day, I find it hard to believe, and I regret the angry conversations I get into with rationalists about, you know, I don't want to take away their thunder. I love rationalism. I love technology. I'm grateful for my car and my television and all of the things that science and technology have brought us. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other ways of apprehending truth in the universe. And sometimes you can't even, you know, initiate the discussion.
Stephen, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you. What a rapid night. And then later on next hour, John Zaffis, the paranormal investigator, joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Stephen, I bet you've rattled your head trying to figure out, though, how does astrology work? You're convinced it works, but how does it work?
I am grateful that I don't really know any more than I know. You know, we've all had the experience. In fact, it's funny, the bumper music that was just playing was All Along the Watchtower, and I made a mental note that I really want to download that to my iPod. And I guess where I'm going with this is that it is the same way that sometimes you hear a poem, or you hear a piece of music, or you see a film, and you have a very powerful revelation about something, and we'll call it a truth. I don't know how music gets you to that kind of revelation about something that matters to you, but it does sometimes. That's the way astrology works for me. It's associative, not causative. There's just something in it that seems to be the right story at the right moment. I have no interest in falling on my sword trying to prove that there's scientific validity to astrology, and sometimes I get upset with even some of the most brilliant astrologers. Lately, that seems to be the game, because we live in a technology society. The astrologers want to prove that there's a scientific, you know, credibility to all of this, and maybe there is some, but it's not the operative thing. What we're accessing with astrology and so many other for want of a better term, metaphysical arts is something that's so hard to describe, and I think we're better off not describing it.
Let's go to final calls here. Miles, driving around in Illinois, first-time caller. Miles, thanks for holding so long.
No problem. The question I have for Stephen real quick is, has anyone looked at the 12-year cycle in relation to 2012 by historically looking at what was going on in 2000, December of 2000? See, my recollection is that the retail business was going pretty good at that time. I was in retail at that time, and it seemed like that Christmas everything was going really well. But I wondered about as far as the cycle comparison between those two different 12-year periods.
Yeah, that's a great question. And like I say, I don't know many people who are doing the 12-year cycle stuff that I'm doing, and I don't do it in every aspect. I will say this, though, that I don't see, you know, a dire economic situation vis-a-vis investments, the stock market, and so forth. And a lot of astrologers right now have decided that you know, this coming year is going to be a bear of great proportions. Based on my cyclical work, I see it as kind of a flat year, quite frankly. The year that's coming up, I see it as one in which, and frankly, the cycle that I encountered went all the way back to 1959, which was a year in which American society decided that it wasn't prudent to put all your money in the bank. We had to get into the stock market, and what happened that year? There was an amazing number of new issues in 1959. There were really all sorts of new instruments, but net, the year ended really flat. And I think we're coming into that kind of year, a year where everyone will want to get into the market because we have to grow what remaining capital we have, but nothing much is going to happen. Now, I'm totally, this has nothing to do with the 12-year cycle, and I am clearly in the minority on this. So a lot of very good astrologers are saying trouble, especially next summer. But as I say, I try to find a happier spin on things. So it didn't answer your question, but I did want to say that I don't see, you know, I don't see doom and gloom in the economy. I don't see an easy economy, but I'm not I'm alone out here on that branch.
See any asteroid strikes? Anything weird?
You know, I don't think I have the courage to look for that sort of thing. But I do, as we discussed earlier, I do have this sense of Neptune. Neptune can manifest anything. I say about Neptune is that Neptune, the lesson that Neptune wants to teach us is that whatever is impossible is possible. And so, you know, Neptune can mean anything. It can mean aliens. It can mean the oil markets. It can mean the most amazing new drugs and chemicals. It can mean anything having to do with the ocean. It can have to do with charities. I mean, all of these things are Neptune. But basically, net, Neptune is dominating the economic charts that I work with right now. And Neptune won't let you see. Neptune throws up a veil, and good luck to you to try and pin it down. And I think that's what I think is going on in the economic markets. We don't know yet. The thing that scares me is I think that part of that is, as I said earlier, I don't think we're getting good data. That's I will go out on that limb. I don't think we're getting good data.
Let's go to Redding, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Ann. Good morning, Ann.
Oh, good morning, George. Thank you.
Sure thing.
And thank you, Stephen. You sound so intelligent, and I love your analogy with music. I don't know a whole lot about astrology, but I can just imagine looking at a chart and seeing it as a symphony.
Thank you, Ann.
All of these different frequencies coming in for each particular soul.
Yes.
And it just absolutely amazes me. Anyway, my charts. She did one on my son, my oldest son, when he was born. And her take on interpretation was pretty negative a lot of times. And she said, oh, my God, he has the either the potential to be a Christ or an Antichrist. It was like a T-square or something. This young man is 12/29/74, and so he's a Capricorn, and so therefore, as you say, Pluto's in Capricorn right now with Uranus and, what did you say, the other one squared?
Yeah, Uranus is about to go into Aries.
Pardon?
Uranus is about to go into Aries. Saturn is about to go into Libra, and it's going to form one heck of a T-square. You know, as I've been saying all night, I'm not a doom and gloomer, but man, those are powerful aspects, and they're not going to be easy.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of. I'm terrified. It's like I die a thousand deaths every day, watching what's happening to him. He's a vet with PTSD, tremendous anxiety and depression. And he has slipped into using any drugs he can get a hold of to anesthetize his feelings and function.
That's not good, Stephen. That's not good.
No. And nor would I dream of making a specific analysis. I will say though to your Capricorn listeners, this is a time where Capricorn energy is needed in the world. Capricorns do aspire to leadership and we need that kind of leadership right now. Capricorns are right now are feeling like they're emerging from a very long, decades long sleep, and we need them now. This unfortunate young man, I couldn't begin to know how that's what his specific situation is, but Capricorns should be ready to take some prominent roles in our society over the next two decades.
Absolutely. Let's go to Chicopee, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Ken, you're up.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning. I'm calling because I have in my possession, and I'm the only one left in my family, 70 years ago, my mother, when she was married, they had a thing done on the whole entire family,
mm-hmm.
and a reading, and it's all in a big folder, but I have never read it, and I have it in my possession. But I've never read it, and it's all, as I say, all my family. And
how come you haven't read it?
You're the least curious person I've ever heard about.
Actually, I think because it was my mother always had it, and I just knew of it, and I knew it was around somewhere. And when we, of course, she passed away just about 4 or 5 years ago. I just brought it with me.
Yeah.
And I still have it, and I've been thinking it might be pretty interesting, but I've never read it, but because it's about the whole family, which there's none of us, but we had, it was quite a sized family.
I'd be curious to see how accurate it was.
That's what I'm wondering myself, how accurate it is.
Well, you may be in possession of a remarkable document. Maybe one of these days, maybe this will help prompt you to read it. I can't imagine sitting on something that long and not looking at it.
What do you advise people who want to go to an astrologer? What do they look for?
Wow, that's a great question, and that's not an easy one to answer either. There are so many different kinds of astrologers, by temperament. And there are really some talented people out there who can do a lot of good work. It's my good fortune to know a lot of them. But I think that, it's fair to engage in a short conversation with an astrologer before you go to have a reading. Any astrologer who wants to read for you should be able to give you at least 15 minutes of time. And it's okay to go with your feeling. You'll sort of know that an individual is temperamentally suited to you. You have to play the vibe. It's so difficult to say, and it's a great question because it helps to come in. It's funny. If you go to a doctor, you don't say to the doctor, hey, guess what my symptoms are? You don't play a game with the doctor saying, tell me something about myself.
Yeah.
And yet that's the way people handle astrologers. I'm very big. I don't do a lot of readings, but when I do readings, I'm very interested into life path sort of things. I'm very big into destiny and big picture and where you're moving in this lifetime. Some people really want to know about relationships. You know, as my boyfriend being honest with me, you got to find out if that's the kind of astrology you're dealing with. You know, do you want precise questions like, you know, I lost my wallet. I mean, there are astrologers who can really do this sort of thing pretty well. You know, and so you want to just check with the astrologer that you know, well, I'm very happy to learn my destiny, but basically I wanted a reading because, you know, I lost my earrings. And so it's good to just have a 15-minute interview period and see if this is the right individual.
In relationships, can astrology really tell you whether you're going to click with someone?
It can give you a pretty good sense. What I find is you don't want to – there's that very fine line between you over-suggesting to someone and then they believe it because you've been, you know, you've been forceful about it. But yeah, I think relationship charts and some of the techniques that I've seen for relationships work darn well. And I think that – let's put it this way. If an astrologer tells you that the relationship is not going to click, okay, that's a piece of information, and you shouldn't, you know, throw over someone or not have the relationship just because. But a decent astrologer, and if there's any validity to this at all, may point out some of the stress or tension areas that could exist. And I have found that's pretty helpful information to get.
Well, and 5 years later, the astrologer could have been right, and then you go, I should have listened to him.
Yeah, exactly.
Next up, Moses, Wilmington, Delaware, first-time caller. Hey, Moses, go ahead.
Hi. It took me 3 years and about an astrology readout for me to call you.
Well, you made it.
Thank you, and you're wonderful. I wanted to express my feelings to the public that we are upon about 850 days to 2012 event, and that we are, as a people, should be doing good and learning more about these things that's about to come. And my astrology chart was telling me that I'm a person of need for the world, for the planet. And I do my best to do good for people every day. And I've been led by my Lord. You know, I have faith in my Lord. So this is what helping me drive my days and to search out for people to help. And I think we all have that chart. If we go to astrology and get our readout, and I think we do have a degree of a certain sign that we should know about, and I think that's the one way we should know about ourselves, because we as a people have a purpose here. So that's what I wanted to voice out to you.
Very good. Thanks, Moses. Do you, Stephen, react to your astrological chart every day?
No, absolutely not. You'd go absolutely mad if you did. But I'm around it so much, and especially now that you know, if I told you that I didn't look at the astrological aspects for my appearance on your show, I'd be lying to you. I did, and I was very pleased. They're quite favorable, so I was even doubly happy to come on because I will check out certain events. But no, it's you know, my wife and my son, I rarely look at their charts. I just don't want to, you know, and occasionally they'll ask me a question, but I just don't want to mess around in their destiny too much. You know, I don't want to. I have a very good sense of knowing my limits. And while I think this is the most interesting stuff in the world, and while I've seen it work many, many times, it's there's some power there that one needs to be discreet in exercising. So no, I don't look all the time.
Do you ever go to any of these companies' events, your clients' conferences, or places that they go?
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, it's funny. Many of them are interested, and frankly, I could give you a list of. When I had Signs of Success published, I said to the editor at Outcome, what I thought would happen with the book is that a lot of people would own it, but nobody would keep it out on their desk. And what I found about astrology in business is that the people who are inclined to utilize it or believe it, it's their edge. They really don't want the rest of the world to know that they're using it, for the most part. It's something that they do. It's kind of private. They, you know, there are a lot of people who consult, you know, privately. But it's not, you know, in our country, in our culture, it's still not discreet to bring astrology into the workplace. But I see more and more people who are opening up to it. I see people willing to accept it on a humor basis, and then you know, fate willing, they start to see that you're intelligent, and then it's relationship building. Then they understand. Okay, I kind of trust you, so tell me more about this. And you know, it's like any other business relationship. You work on building a relationship.
All right, we'll go next to Ontario, Canada. Hey, Mo, take it away.
Good morning, George. How are you? And
good morning,
Mo. Guest.
Sure thing.
Good morning.
George, I don't know how it began, but from the very first time I've listened to the show, I fell in love. You present the truth bare naked in the most best of ways, and I love the show and enjoy it every night.
Good. Thank you.
As we know that the stars and planets and moons of these planets roam in the same orbit in a repeated manner, and they have they maintain their position in the skies in a repeated way. How can we rely on repeated events to predict a future if they keep happening every certain cycle of time?
Well, that is a good question. How do you do that, Stephen?
Yeah, and once again, I let me just say that prediction scares the. Prediction, I'm very, very uncomfortable with because of the amount of variables that exist in any astrological chart. The heavens, encompassing everything we can see, and some things that we only know about by telescopes and by other forms of probing the cosmos, we never have the same situation twice. There's no moment of reality that ever exactly replicates another moment of reality. A well-known Mark Twain quote is, "History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes," and that's the way that astrology, I think, informs. That's what I talk about echo periods. I think there are echoes, but not exact duplications of history, and so the planets can point one's way towards consideration, but it won't tell you exactly what's going to happen, thank goodness.
And Stephen, do you tell your clients what to do, or do you tell them what is happening?
The richest vein really has been this generational work, because people want to understand large groups of people. Most of the businesses that I work with are retail or food service oriented. They're trying to do mass product. And they need to do segmentation is the marketing term for it. They need to understand groups of people, and that's where I find this most valuable. Now, as I get deeper,
I agree with that, Stephen. We're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being on the program. His latest work, "The Signs of Success." Up next, John Zappas on Coast to Coast AM.